Green Valley nodded slowly, his gaze thoughtful, and Merlin shrugged. Obviously, he continued, their equipment hasn't been as good as what we took to Coruscant with us, but then no one's has, when you come down to it. And, just as you've undoubtedly been discovering, their formations and drill are all oriented around tactics which have just become obsolete, but again, they're scarcely alone in that. Given the weapons available to everybody a few years ago, my impression is that East Cher's troops could at least hold their own against any of the mainland armies, man for man, and probably kick their arses for them, for that matter. Except for Siddharmark, of course. It was Green Valley's turn to snort. The Republic of Siddharmark's army was widely acknowledged, with good reason, as the most effective armed force in Safehold's history. On land, at least, Siddharmark's navy was virtually non-existent, and the Royal Carizian Navy had reigned supreme upon Safehold's seas even before Merlin Othrawes's arrival in Telesburg. Any place a Siddharmarkian pike phalanx could find a place to stand, though, it reigned supreme. Which explained the Republic's successful, sustained expansion southward towards the Desnarian Empire over the past 150 Safeholdian years or so. That expansion had been halted only when the Knights of the Temple Lands guaranteed the frontiers of the Grand Duchy of Silkaia in the Treaty of Silktown in 869. Silkaia was at least nominally independent, although its Grand Duke paid a substantial yearly tribute to Desnair. He also paid one to the Knights of the Temple Lands every year, although that one was called a tithe and, until very recently, had been paid by every Safeholdian ruler. Not officially to the Knights of the Temple Lands, of course, but that was only because the Knights of the Temple Lands all just happened to be members of the Church of God Awaiting's Council of Vicars as well. Their dual role as both secular and temporal rulers gave them a significant unfair advantage. Yet it imposed certain disadvantages as well, especially now. The Knights of the Temple Lands had been nervous for a long, long time about that magnificent Siddharmarkian army just on the other side of their shared frontier, and over the years they'd used their power as princes of the church to help discourage any adventurism on the part of a succession of the Republic's Knights Protector. The Treaty of Silktown might be the most flagrant example of their intervention, but it was scarcely the only one. That hadn't exactly helped the Church's relations with the Republic, although it had scarcely seemed likely to provoke an open breach, whatever some of the vicars might have thought, given the Church's unassailable supremacy. But now that the Church's supremacy had been assailed, all of the anxieties which had been entertained by decades of church chancellors had just acquired an entirely new point. There was no real evidence of any general movement of Siddharmarkians to embrace the Church of Caris, yet that didn't keep the group of four, the quartet of powerful vicars who truly ruled the church, from worrying about what might yet happen. I wish it would happen, Merlin thought more than a bit wistfully. But however much Stonar resents the church, or the group of four at least, he's not about to climb out on a limb with Caris. I don't think it's because he disagrees with Caris's accusations of church corruption, or because he has any illusions about the sanctity of the group of four and their motivations. But he's pragmatic as hell, and as well aware of the balance of power as anyone. In fact, he's better aware of it than almost anyone else. Besides, from what I've seen, he doesn't think any move to break with the church would find general support in Siddharmark. And for the moment at least, it looks like he's right about that. The thing that impresses me most about the Chisomians, to be honest, the Sajan continued out loud, is how readily and smoothly they seem to be adopting to the new tactics. He raised one eyebrow at Green Valley, inviting comment, and the Baron nodded. You're right about that, he agreed. It seems to me that their officers are grasping the reasons behind the new tactics even faster than our troops did. And they're not just going through the motions in order to keep their majesties happy. For that matter, they're not even just duplicating what we've got to teach them either. Instead, they're thinking about why we made the changes we've made, and looking for ways to make what we've already accomplished even more effective.